From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cass. We're on the record. Caregiving is a calling shared by millions of Americans. One out of four adult children in the U.S. is providing unpaid care to an aging adult. It can be physically and emotionally hard. But Ann Kaiser-Stearns, professor of behavioral science at CCBC, argues it can also help a caregiver understand how she herself will age and how she can shape the kind of old age she wants. In her new book, Redefining Aging, Stearns confronts myths, like the idea that if someone in dementia doesn't remember your visit, it's pointless.
So your grandmother might not remember that you're her granddaughter, yet she'll respond to your smile, she'll respond to your touch, she'll be grateful for acts of kindness and respect. So visits matter.
It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. In some ways, caregiving is the new normal. One in four U.S. adult children provides unpaid care to an aging adult. Everything from hands-on physical care to shopping and household help to managing other resources to the whole range. It can be exhausting and debilitating, but it can also be a platform for a meaningful life and a springboard to better understanding how you yourself will age and how you can shape the kind of old age you want. Psychologist Ann Kaiser-Stearns, a professor of behavioral science at the Community College of Baltimore County, combines research insights and problem-solving tips in her new book, Redefining Aging, A Caregiver's Guide to Living Your Best Life. Dr. Stearns is with me in the studio. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you.
Professor Stearns, let's start with your point that a caregiver, as they watch someone they love gradually lose a sense of dignity and independence or lose mobility, cognitive skills, a caregiver feels anxious about what their own fate will be later in life. That seems
scary. It was interesting. As I was writing the book, I found myself thinking about my grandmother who had Alzheimer's and my mother who had Alzheimer's. And I thought, you know, that's what we go through when we're caregivers for the next generation ahead of us. And fortunately, it is not inevitable to get Alzheimer's disease, for example. It is rarely genetic, and it is more commonly related to many lifestyle factors that feed into turning on those genes or keeping them off. But it's an interesting process of dealing with one's own anxiety about aging. The good news is there are a lot of things we can do to reduce that anxiety.
What is normal aging, and what are the early signs of dementia?
It does not bespeak dementia on the way when you can't remember a name. The good news is we've had trouble remembering names since we were teenagers, and that has nothing to do with the process of aging that involves disease. Everybody does that. Everybody goes to the living room and says, oh, what did I come here for from the kitchen? All of that is normal aging. It's also normal aging to just, studies show that from 20 to 70, our IQ stays the same, but we process things more slowly. It takes a little longer to learn something new. That's all normal. What isn't normal is not being able to operate the microwave that you've been operating for years and years. It's not forgetting where your keys are. It's not remembering what keys are for. So it's when someone who has been able to do things competently all their lives suddenly can't do something. It's not that you go out and even your neighbor who you've lived next to for 15 years, maybe right then you're introducing them to someone and you can't remember their name, but you remember it 2 hours later or tomorrow. That's normal aging. What is an alarm sign is when you see your neighbor you've lived next to for 15 years and you can't even know who they are. You don't even know they're your neighbor. They're completely stranger. So that's the kind of difference between normal aging and red flags.
Should we expect that if we live long enough, we will
the
be coping with dementia?
The good news is that that is a myth. Actually, it's not true that if we live long enough, we'll all have multiple strokes or develop Alzheimer's disease. If you look at the studies, you'll see that people at age 90, there is still only a 50 to 40% risk of having a dementia, even when we're 90 years old. And if you look at people before they're 80, any memory problems before 80 bespeak disease, not normal aging.
Nothing is as daunting to anyone as they age, but especially to a caregiver as concern about developing dementia. How much control can we really exert over that?
Over our own aging process?
Right.
Absolutely. Well, there are four things that double the risk of Alzheimer's, for instance: smoking, diabetes, obesity, and sleep apnea. You can avoid getting those things, and you can get medical treatment for them if you have them. We need to prevent other kinds of problems. We need to keep ourselves from having head injuries by wearing bike helmets and using seat belts. We need to be seeing our doctors about our blood pressure. We need to be careful about long-term exposure to toxins and too much substance use. We need to reduce stress. Chronic stress ages us prematurely. And the most important thing I could say is we need to stay physically active. Inactivity is a significant cause of lots of things, from heart disease and contributing to diabetes and contributing to various forms of dementia.
A long list of factors. What if you haven't been paying much attention until you're well into middle age?
Whenever you start exercising, you reap the benefits. Yes, it's important. Oh, and the other thing is, in midlife, that's when the studies show that we form our concept of what aging is. We develop our stereotype, either for good or ill, of aging in our 40s. And Becca Levy out at Yale University School of Public Health has done this longitudinal research showing that people form their idea of getting old in their 40s, and then they live a self-fulfilling prophecy. So we need to look at who are our role models and how are we thinking about aging, because we can get ourselves old before our time.
That's Ann Kaiser-Stearns, Professor of Behavioral Science at the Community College of Baltimore County, here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about her new book, full of stories from real life, titled Redefining Aging, A Caregiver's Guide to Living Your Best Life. I want to pick up on what you were just mentioning. You write about what you call, quote, the stereotype threat, close quote, of ageism. I think I get the stereotype. What is the threat?
Okay. The threat is that we buy into the stereotype and adopt it. So if you are a super bright black kid and you have a white teacher, the studies show that you are three times less likely to be identified as gifted as if you have a black teacher. And the tragedy is that little kid is apt to not recognize in himself that he's bright and talented and should be in an honors math class, for instance. Well, what happens with all these messages from society of catheter advertisements and women writhing on the floor saying, help, help, I need a medical alert, and all of these terrible things of chairlifts and the advertisements that stereotype older people to a ridiculous point. We watch those things and we take in the negative stereotype ideas of aging, and if it's a threat, unless we decide, I'm not going to buy into that. I'm going to not talk about having a senior moment when I forget something. I'm not going to talk about my knee hurts. I just played tennis. My knee hurt just as much when I was 25 playing tennis. It's sort of like not buying into the language of talking about ourselves like we're old.
But what is the line between locking yourself into a stereotype and making a realistic assessment.
Well, that's a really good point, because this is not a level playing field world in which we live. Some of us have illnesses that have been passed down to our family, and we have a greater risk of arthritis, and some of us have had debilitating accidents. And we can do lots to keep our brains healthy, and we can do lots to reduce our risks. But we are all going to eventually, if we're lucky enough and live long enough, we will all have some disabilities. But we need to think of it as just a stage in life as opposed to a state. We need to think of, okay, there are these problems that I must manage. There are these adjustments I should make. But I'm still a vital person. I'm still going to live a vital life, even if I'm walking with a cane or even if I have to limit my activities in certain ways.
I want to pick up on an example you spent a couple of pages on, hearing, the ability mm-hmm. to hear. You write, if we buy into these stereotypes, we literally will not hear as well, remember as well, think as clearly, stand as straight, walk as fast, or feel as self-worthy as we will if we recognize, resist, and reject those ageist stereotypes. But I think many of our listeners would say it is more likely in their experience that someone as they age will think the rest of the world has a mumbling problem than realize that they have a hearing problem.
Well, back to that research, and it's all evidence-based. I had a hard time believing the research myself, but it comes from an esteemed 30-year study out of Yale University School of Public Health with Becca Levy, and it is her study showed that that expectation of all these deficiencies we're supposed to acquire, like hearing and vision and so on, yes, we do diminish, many of us, over the time in those capabilities. But what she found was that there is such stress on the cardiovascular system as a result of the expectations of those problems that people experience the problems. Let me give you an example. So I'm a college professor, and both my father and my brother had hardness of hearing, and so I thought I was having trouble hearing my students on the back row. So I went to a MD and had all these tests, and I had a hard time believing him because I really thought I was having a hearing problem. And finally, he just put all the statistics and the charts and the data right in front of me, and he said, "You do not have a hearing problem." And so I went back to my classroom, and I often teach in a classroom that has kind of a noisy air conditioner in the back. And so I said, "You know, listen, my hearing is fine. The air conditioner is making a lot of noise, so speak up, you all in the back room." But I had talked myself into having a hearing problem. So men especially are more likely to have hearing problems because of their work. My dad was a hunter and a farmer. My brother also was a hunter and was an engineer in petroleum factories. And so he was exposed to a lot of noise. They had environmental reasons to lose their hearing. But we just have to watch, what am I expecting? I like to say, as you expect to experience and experience, so you experience that experience. So we need to be careful what we're expecting.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly.
The primary recurring message of Redefining Aging in every chapter is the importance of taking care of yourself, especially if you're caregiving. Frankly, Ann Kaiser-Stearns, caregivers have heard that message before. What are you bringing to the table that you think is newly persuasive?
Well, you're going to burn yourself out as a caregiver. You're going to be less effective. You're going to age prematurely yourself. The studies show that if a caregiver lives many years taking care of a person with dementia and they don't get enough resources, tap into resources outside, they themselves have an increased risk of dementia. It is so important, I guess, to emphasize you'll be a better caregiver and you'll live longer and happier and healthier yourself if you take care of yourself.
We need to take a quick break here. We're talking with psychologist and counselor Anne Kaiser-Stearns about her new book, Redefining Aging, A Caregiver's Guide to Living Your Best Life. She'll be speaking about it Wednesday at noon in Canton. When we're back from the break, we'll dive into some of her myth-busting about caregiving. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. If you're a baby boomer, chances are good that at some point, if you're not doing it now or have done it already, you will be called on to be responsible for the care and protection of an aging parent or other family member. 3 out of 4 of the people who step into that role are women. It can be hard for anybody at any age, male or female. We're talking this morning with Anne Kaiser-Stearns, professor of behavioral science at the Community College of Baltimore County, about her new book, Redefining Aging, A Caregiver's Guide to Living Your Best Life. You try to explode what you say are myths about caregiving, and the first one you lay out is, quote, "It doesn't matter what I do, they won't remember it anyway," close quote. If you're caring for someone with dementia, why is that a myth?
Well, think about how you love your child. Your child will not remember any of the first 3 years of the child's life. And yet we love our children. We talk to them. We sing to them. We take them for strolls. We pat their little sweet heads. We read books. We cherish them. And they take it all in, but they won't remember anything. But it is in their being. My kids don't remember when they went to Disney World or Disneyland, and they don't remember lots of things, but all of that love and all of that fun and all of that warmth they received is in their being, in their heart. So your grandmother might not remember that you're her granddaughter, and yet she'll respond to your smile. She'll respond to your touch. She'll know you're a familiar person. She'll be grateful for acts of kindness and respect. She'll respond to your wheeling her outdoors to look at the trees and the flowers and to feel the fresh air and to experience the sun and to share that experience together. So visits matter. It doesn't, and we need to not take things personally. I remember visiting my grandmother in a nursing home and crying. I was young and I was devastated. I was so close to her. But what I didn't understand was that Granny was still there. She was still a person. She still could receive lots of things from me. And we need to think about that relationship to loving our children and practice that concept when we think about our elders.
Anger comes up often in redefining aging. Anger when the person you're caring for out of dementia insults you, or anger when other family members slough caregiving duties off onto you. How do you suggest people cope with that anger?
It's especially tough when your loved one, you're knocking yourselves out to help them, and you're doing so much and making so many sacrifices, and then they accuse you of stealing. It's devastating. But you have to remember that's coming from a dementia mind. It's not coming from the person that you love. And the best thing to do is to not get angry and not defend yourself, but to ask questions about it. Who told you that? Or what makes you think that? Or where did you get that idea? To have the person tell you about it and to listen to them seriously so they can say, well, this happened and this happened. One of the people I interviewed, their mother-in-law had to move her car because she didn't drive it anymore, and they were paying for its location. They had to move it, and she thought they'd taken it and sold it and kept the money. And basically they were devastated, like, how can you accuse me of that? But what needed to happen is just, well, what makes you think that we would steal it? What happened here? And then you can explain, well, we were having to pay rent to keep it at the assisted living place, and so we've parked it at our home now, and it's fine. But we need to respond to elderly people, even when they have dementia, and maybe especially then, we need to respond to them like we would anyone and take their concern seriously and ask them to tell us more about the concern so we can answer that as opposed to just saying it's not true or arguing with them.
You say humor can somehow sometimes diffuse anger.
Well, yes. I think we have to not take ourselves so seriously. And I think the best kind of humor is when we laugh at ourselves. There is such a thing as too much of a good thing, where we're overly conscientious and we get obsessed with, he's wearing the same trousers 5 days in a row and I can't stand it. Well, what does it matter if he's wearing the same trousers 5 days in a row? Sneak them out at night and wash them and put them back there. Sometimes we try to be such good caregivers that we do too much, exhaust ourselves, stress ourselves out, and sometimes we can just step back and laugh at ourselves and say, there I go again.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Professor Anne Kaiser-Stearns at the Community College of Baltimore County about her new book, Redefining Aging, A Caregiver's Guide to Living Your Best Life. You write there's a learning curve to caregiving, and you quote Dr. Ray DiPaolo, the former head of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins Medicine, about ways to avoid what you call, quote, the catastrophic reaction, close quote. What is the catastrophe?
The catastrophe is that sometimes the person with dementia gets so exasperated that they scream or cry or lash about and their emotions explode. And what we want to do is slow things down, let things go, and do the kinds of behaviors that make that less likely to happen, to blow up into a catastrophic reaction. For instance, keep the cognitively impaired person's environment as familiar and comfortable as possible. Keep the communication respectful and caring. If grandmother doesn't remember your name, don't take it personally. If you're accused of stealing, do what we were talking about earlier, of talk about that. Well, why would you think that, or where did you get that idea? And no one wants to be forced to do anything. Another myth is that elderly people with Alzheimer's are like children. No, they're not. No one is a child except when they're a child. And we need to treat elders with respect and kindness and patience. And that means if she is going to be all upset by my rushing around and getting her dressed for the outing we're about to have, I shouldn't be helping her have her bath then. That's not the time. If you're in a hurry, if you've got a deadline, do the bathing some other time. Do those things that are time consuming. And allow for more time. It takes a long time for a cognitively impaired person to dress, for instance. Slow things down.
What is your most practical advice about learning to accept help?
Well, it goes back to that humility thing. I always like to say that the people, when I did do counseling, the people who came for help were the healthiest people. It's a sign of your health and your strength to reach out for help. I like to use the analogy of those enormous trees in California that are so high you can hardly see them. And you would think they had a root ball that was enormous to hold them up, but they actually don't. They have roots that go out like fingers and connect to the other roots of other trees and other trees and other trees. And if you can imagine that linking of other people, what makes us strong is to not live isolated lives. What makes us strong is to reach out in interconnected way with other people, with agencies, with resources, with other family members. Strength comes from our community, our relationships with each other, not trying to do everything alone.
Thank you so much for this conversation.
My pleasure.
The new book by psychologist Ann Kaiser Stearns, a professor of behavioral science at the Community College of Baltimore County, is Redefining Aging, A Caregiver's Guide to Living Your Best Life, published by Johns Hopkins University Press. She'll be speaking about it Wednesday at noon at the Hatton Senior Center in Canton, part of the Enoch Pratt Free Library's Writers Live series. At the On the Record page at WYPR.org, we have links to information about that event and the book. And let me take this moment to remind you of another event on Wednesday, the Community Conversation about Opioid Addiction and Recovery, hosted by the University of Maryland Medical System. Information about that at the On the Record page also. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're listening to On the Record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.